Some scientists had theorized that perhaps the voices were coming from ham radio broadcasts and bouncing off the ionosphere. The supervising engineer, Peter Hale, was a physicist and an electronics engineer. Hale was considered the leading expert on electronic suppression in Great Britain, and one of the five leading sound engineers in the West. Billing and Lee is used by the British government to test its most sophisticated defense equipment. What happened baffled the sound engineers. Again, paranormal voices were recorded on factory fresh tape. Hale said, "In view of the tests carried out in a screened laboratory at my firm, I cannot explain what happened in normal physical terms." In 1969, Dr. Ordive shared a first prize award from the Swiss Association for Parapsychology along with Swiss physicist Professor Alexander Schneider for their discoveries of direct voice messages on tape. Many of Ordive's friends and colleagues, inspired by his work, began experiments in this new field of EVP. Swiss physicist Alex Schneider discovered that many of the spirit voices could not be heard by the human ear during recording, but they could be heard while playing back the tape. High-frequency engineer Theodor Rudolph, an employee of the German communications company Telefunken, developed the goniometer and electronics engineer Franz Seidel developed the psychophoton, both sophisticated recording devices. Because of the great pioneering experiments made by Ordive, many experimenters today refer to the short, faint voices of EVP as Ordive voices. Scottish researcher, Alexander McRae, studied hundreds of the Ordive voices and found that they lasted an average of 1.8 seconds. All of the experimenters worked toward getting longer, stronger voices in dialogue that would help turn their invisible friends into allies that could convey useful information to Earth. If only there were a way to transmit pictures from the spirit realm to Earth. In 1969, German experimenter, Hanna Buschbeck, founded the German Electronic Voice Association and published a newsletter to report their results which European experimenters were achieving. Then, in the 1978 EMS, a significant breakthrough occurred. Ironically, it occurred in the US where EVP had been virtually ignored. Retired industrialist George Meek and his wife Jeanette had been traveling around the world with teams of researchers to explore first-hand spiritual healing, materialization, and other paranormal phenomena. In 1973, the Meeks met a psychically gifted man, William Bill O'Neill, who had been having some fascinating and rather bizarre materialization experiences at his Pennsylvania home. One evening, Bill's wife Mary Alice, also psychically gifted, went into a trance. Suddenly, a young girl materialized in their living room. She said her name was Lorna and she was looking for her mother. But as soon as Mary Alice came out of her trance state, the child vanished. Meanwhile, Bill was having some very interesting psychic experiences of his own. In his upstairs lab, he had a spirit visitor named Doc Nick, a deceased ham radio operator. Bill could see him clearly and he tried to tape Doc Nick's voice. But when he recorded his conversations with Doc Nick, only his own voice was captured on tape. Naturally, it worried him since he could not prove whether the voice of Doc Nick, that he heard in his head, was real or a delusion. Also, only he could see Doc Nick. His wife couldn't. Bill tried to take pictures of Doc Nick, but the photos were blank. Frustrated, Bill became exasperated with his failures to record any evidence of Doc Nick and he lit a fire, intending to burn the blank pictures. Just as he was about to toss the first photo into the fireplace, he felt a hand on his shoulder. Thinking it was Mary Alice, he turned. Startled, he saw a tall, well-dressed gentleman. Fearfully, Bill realized that it was another spirit materialization. The spirit said he needed Bill's help on a research project involving improved EVP communication. In a black mood, Bill replied, "No one will believe it anyway, so what's the use?" The spirit assured Bill he'd give him plenty of documentation. "On Earth I was Dr. George Jeffries Muller. I was a university professor and a NASA scientist." He smiled. "I can give you my social security number, my family and career history, and even some unlisted phone numbers of former colleagues, if you want them. Skeptical, Bill shrugged. Who will believe me? At that moment, Mary Alice spoke up from the doorway. Yatiamelel believe you, honey. I see him, too. Bill jerked around. Can you hear him speaking? I can see his lips moving, but I can't hear him, she replied. That was the beginning of an astonishing collaboration between dimensions, Doc Mueller and Doc Nick in spirit, helping Bill O'Neill on Earth design a new piece of electromagnetic equipment that would convert spirit voices into audible voices. The project almost didn't get off the ground, however, because the O'Neills were broken, the many paranormal events in their home had left Bill shaken and unstable emotionally. He had serious doubts about continuing paranormal investigation. However, George Meek, who had been helping the O'Neills out for 4 years, giving Bill an occasional check to continue his paranormal experiments, felt that Bill was really onto something. Look, he said, Yatiamelel give you $60 a week to keep working on the communication project with Doc Mueller and Doc Nick. Bill did not like taking handouts, but considered the money as pay for a job that only he could do. He continued with the work. Ironically, in the next few months there developed a competitive rivalry between Doc Mueller and Doc Nick as they helped develop a spirit communication machine, Spiricom. The machine produced a set of tones and frequencies that span the range of the adult male voice. The rivalry puzzled Bill, for he'd assumed that once people made their transition to spirit, petty human emotions would disappear. George Meek, who'd been doing experiments on his own for many years, assured Bill that such feelings were normal for beings operating at a low level of spirit, that is, at spiritual frequencies which exist near the physical world. George said that in order for Doc Nick and Doc Mueller to communicate with Bill, they needed to descend, all over their frequency to be near the Earth, and in so doing, they resumed many of their earthly thought patterns, emotions and behaviors. Finally, on October 27, 1977, after several months of experimenting, the voice of Doc Nick came through on Spiricom. His voice could barely be heard through the heavy tones of the equipment, but after all the effort that had gone into the project, even this was a remarkable accomplishment. That history-making dialogue began. Bill, try it again. Doc Nick, all right. Do you hear me now, Bill? Can you hear me, Bill? Bill, yeah, but you make it sound just like, oh boy, a robot on television. Doc Nick, yes, we always will, when we will. The one thing, you hear, Bill? You hear, Bill? Bill, nervously adjusting the frequencies, yeah, okay. You have to forgive me, Buta Broken Bar, I know this is, you have to admit this is kind of scary. Doc Nick, why are you, leave it alone, leave it alone. Did you hear me, Bill? Do you hear what I say? Bill, yeah, I got it now, Doc. In the ensuing years, Doc Mueller gradually moved into the research picture as Doc Nick moved out. By the fall of 1980, with the help of Doc Mueller, who had studied electronics during his lifetime, Spiricom had advanced to the point where the spirit voice, although quite buzzy, was easily understandable. On Easter Sunday in 1982, George Meek held a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. to announce the success of Spiricom. The Meek O'Neill project had made contact with the mind of a NASA scientist who had died 14 years earlier. Not only had they made contact with Dr. George Jeffries Mueller, but they had gone on to hold over 20 hours of extended dialogue with the man, or rather, with the dead man's mind, memory, personality and soul, or what we generally refer to as the spirit. The pioneering work of George Meek and Bill O'Neill in interdimensional communication planted seeds and fueled minds all around the world. Sarah Estep started the American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomenon, AVP, in 1982 and quickly assembled a list of hundreds of EVP experimenters to receive her newsletter. In Europe, thousands of people were already following up on the EVP experiments of people like Friedrich Jensen and Konstantin Rodive. Meanwhile, George, Bill, and their spirit colleagues had carried EVP a step further. Rather than getting short, faint voices on tape, the Spiricom system allowed, for the first time in history, extended instrumental dialogue with the spiritual world. Spiricom launched in the new field of EUC, or instrumental transcommunication, of the use of electronic systems to undertake meaningful communication across dimensions. Thus, George Meek and Bill O'Neill are usually regarded as the fathers of ITC, just as the Wright brothers are regarded as the fathers of modern flight. And just as airplanes got bigger and better as younger minds built upon the foundation, so has ITC flourished since Spiricom. In 1986, German experimenter Klaus Schreiber received instructions on his tape recorder to turn on the TV. The result was a picture of his deceased daughter Karen. Soon, he was receiving more paranormal images, including one of Albert Einstein. Most notable among the new generation of ITC researchers are Maggie and Jules Hirschfischbach of Luxembourg, directors of SETL, the sound lab in Luxembourg whose work won the 1992 Swiss Award for Paranormal Discoveries and is detailed in this book. Amazingly, Friedrich Jensen and Dr. Konstantin Rohrdive, the great pioneers of EVP, along with Klaus Schreiber mentioned above, have died and are now coming across on television, computer, radio, telephone and fax. On June 12, 1992, Friedrich Jensen told the eagerly watching ITC experimenters on Earth, "Every being is a unity of spirit and body that cannot be separated on Earth or in spirit. The only difference is the fact that the physical body disintegrates and in its place comes the astral body." Some theologians among us consider the possibility that the astral body resolves in absolute spirit now and then. When you leave your area of time and space, your consciousness remains the same. What happens afterwards cannot be explained properly with words anymore. This is perhaps the reason why so many theories develop among you, some of which are mediumistic. Our message is to tell you that your life goes on. Any speculations on how an individual will experience it are bound to be limited in validity. All your scientific, medical or biological speculations miss the mark of these realities. What serves as real to science is not close to reality in the broad picture. It is no more than a word in a book. On November 12, 1992, Dr. Konstantin Rohrdive said this to Luxembourg experimenter Maggie Hirschfischbach: "None of you has to die to be the person you would really like to be. You have only to die because you selected one of many possibilities for yourself." The person who has become panicky and fears death may wish to recall that he has selected his death long before in another dimension. We cannot explain these psychological processes and the variety of possibilities within the limits of ITC contacts. You can, however, learn from us through your mediumistic and intuitive faculties, which you all have but only a few of you use creatively. Today, Konstantin Rohrdive and Friedrich Jensen add a new dimension to their roles as paranormal experimenters. From their perspective on the astral plane, they have become philosophic mentors as well, for a different dimension has new paradigms and a new philosophy must necessarily and inevitably merge. 9 Purpose of Time Stream Lab. Luxembourg Lab. Many people have asked, why is Time Stream contacting us now? The dead have long been trying to contact us and they have achieved some modest success during the past 100 years, through mediums and psychics. Now we are in an age of high tech and at last we have instruments through which they can make a direct transmission without having to come through the mind of a human being. Trying to communicate through a medium a TMS mind is rarely accurate, because the medium is translating what he or she receives and the human mind often colors the information. The primary message is we are not dead. We are alive. There is life beyond the grave. And now, there is the equipment necessary to establish scientific knowledge of the continuity of life, providing apparent proofs. The mission of Time Stream is just beginning, and it may take many years to establish enough proofs so that all of mankind can accept the idea that immortality is a fact, a law of the universe. The work that is to be accomplished is nothing short of changing modern man's whole way of thinking about life itself. As said before, philosophy and religion, too, will have to change to accept this new paradigm of being. Another goal of Time's dream is to open a permanent link between the Earth and the astral plane. Through this link, this bridge, some of the greatest minds of all time, such as Edison, Madame Curie, Nikola Tesla, and other great scientists, may continue to share their knowledge with us to help heal our planet of pollution and societal problems. The third plane already has powered cars and other more highly developed modes of transportation. Their engineers and ours may one day collaborate on new inventions that will solve pollution problems. Deceased physicians at Time's dream hope to medically assist mankind. Spirit doctors helping medical doctors to heal. Spirit doctors have long helped doctors on Earth through telepathy, giving telepathic instructions. Many surgeons have said that while they are operating, it is as if somebody is working through them, using their hands. This is true. Spirit doctors are there in the operating room, trying to help. Many doctors say they pray and meditate to receive input from a higher source. It may well be that in times to come, a doctor on Earth will be able to tune a television set to a certain frequency to discuss a case with a committee of deceased doctors who are specialists in his field. Another of Time's dream's goals is to help man understand the role of animals on Earth and also to help animals. Time's dream is against animal experimentation. Animals are living creatures with a destiny. They are evolving into a higher life form, and how they are treated now, on Earth, will influence them as a higher life form. If an animal is treated kindly and with love, that animal will be a loving being. But if an animal is treated cruelly, that animal can be a cruel, heartless being with thoughts of revenge and hatred that will inevitably play out in some later life. Dr. Conrad Lawrence, deceased now, but alive on the third plane, is in charge of the animals who arrive on the astral plane in the community of Time's dream. Swegen Salter says that he searches with his monitors for locations where animals have died violently, and he uses technical processes to bring those animals into the spirit dimension. The animals find themselves alive again in familiar surroundings, but this time there is no war or environmental pollution. Salter says that this method is also used to locate human beings who died violently and are still wandering aimlessly around their bodies. Lawrence was particularly upset about the innocent animal victims of the Gulf War who were badly mutilated by gunfire and bombs. He said, "It made me ashamed that I was once a human being." Lawrence, a professor on Earth, did not believe in life after death, but he found himself very much alive after he died. He consented to participate in ITC activities because he could help people come to new understandings of the cosmos. To him, the fact that his life continued was not as important as the enlightenment he might bring to other people. Another area of interest to Time's dream is to reveal to mankind that there are consequences to crime. Nobody really gets away with anything. Time's dream confirms the ancient teachings that there is a band of energy or consciousness which surrounds our planet, the Akashic Records. Inscribed on the Akashic Records is every event that ever happened on Earth and, most psychics say, every event that will happen. Although, they also say that many of these events can be changed. For example, Edgar Cayce read the Akashic Records and saw a huge shifting of the Earth before the year 2000. But he felt that man could change that catastrophe if he changed his attitude and his whole lifestyle. However, if man continued on his present course, those events would surely happen. The Akashic Records can be accessed by those on the higher planes and also by gifted psychics on Earth. The entire scene of a crime can be observed. However, high tech adds another dimension to the Akashic Records. In a future scenario, in the case of a murder, the victim now alive in the third plane will be able to give testimony against his or her murderer. Obviously, judicial law as we know it will be changed. Philosophy and religion, too, will have to be modified. So many religious teachings are ego-oriented ideas of the leaders who founded those religions. Many of these ideas are divisive and cause dissension and wars. Time's dream hopes to foster cooperation and understanding among all the religions of the world. SETL, the main receiving lab on Earth, is primarily a research facility, and the experimenters there are committed to opening the lines of communication between Earth and the astral plane. SETL considers itself as an observation post, recording the information received. SETL's directors, Maggie and Jules Harshfishbach, want to encourage research scientists to work in the field of transcommunication, and they hope to encourage research groups around the world. They want to encourage unity among scientists and research groups that study and work in the field of transcommunication. One overriding message that SETL hopes to convey is that we are all one. Our souls, our spirits, are not to be separated from each other. Higher souls do not see us as separate individuals. As long as we on Earth see ourselves as separate from the whole, we will live in separation, isolation and sorrow. People on the third plane come from all periods of time, from many different cultures, and yet they all live in peace and harmony together. The electronic bridge which the astral plane has built to our planet is to help us free ourselves from racism, patriotism and nationalism so that we may achieve an international unity and cooperation on Earth. We are fortunate to live in a time when most of us will see in a very concrete way that another dimension exists and that the people there are holding out their hand to us. 10. Getting started a dot. The equipment you need to do your OWN research in instrumental transcommunication, ITC. If starting out in ITC could be summed up in a single word, the word would be caution. In order for spirit beings to contact us through our systems, whether manifesting their faint EVP voices on audio tape or showing up on photographic film, the beings themselves need to get close to the physical plane in terms of their vibratory rate. That is, they need to be in the lower levels of the spirit worlds where substance is denser and more earth-like than what we would find in the higher worlds. In these lower worlds there is less love and more fear than in the higher worlds. There is less compassion and more malevolence. In other words, the beings there are more human, less godly, and so all sorts of personalities can be accessed by the aspiring ITC experimenter who proceeds without the proper precautions and protection. ITC, as it exists today, is something quite new and unusual for the spiritual dimensions associated with Earth. It involves the plans and coordination of very high spiritual beings working with other spiritual beings on many levels. The messages and images which these beings send to Earth must be channeled through a sending station such as Time Stream, which exists near the Earth, in the lower spirit worlds. Not only the Earth experimenters, but also the sending station and the spirit colleagues who serve thee, all need to be kept under an umbrella of protection that is maintained by higher beings and guardian angels. Everyone in ITC must maximize love and minimize fear in all aspects of their lives in order to remain free of negative, unpleasant energies. So, people wishing to get involved in ITC can find the needed protection in three ways: a prayer, positive thinking and a good rapport with colleagues based on love and unity of thought. Praying with passion from the heart can bring us everything we need in life, including spiritual protection. Positive thinking involves getting in the habit of pushing negative thoughts out of our mind as they come up and replacing them with positive thoughts. Negative thoughts are those that are related to our fears, frustrations, resentments and hatreds. When we are consumed by negative thoughts, we draw lower, negative beings into our life, and higher beings avoid us as we might avoid someone, say, with terribly bad breath. Positive thoughts are the product of our love, trust and appreciation, and these aspects of ourselves draw higher beings into our life. Lower beings keep away from positive thinkers like scavengers keep away from live, healthy animals or people. Establishing a rapport with colleagues and friends based on love and unity of thought is probably the most powerful protection for anyone involved in spiritual work. Getting started. When getting started in just about anything, there are certain basics to consider. In ITC, those basics include the three means of protection just listed. They also include efforts to get voices on audio tape. These short, faint EVP voices are usually the first instrumental contacts a person will get. Following are some suggested steps for getting started in EVP and, later, ITC work. get the basics. Acquire one or two audio cassette recorders, one to be used to record paranormal voices. The other, optional, one to generate a source of noise which the spirit beings will modulate to create EVP voices. In addition to the tape recorders, you will need one microphone with a built-in preamplifier and perhaps an audio mixer, to amplify the microphone, and a set of headphones for concentrated listening. As you might imagine, much of this work involves frequent playback of short excerpts of the recorded tape in order to listen closely for paranormal voices. Therefore, the best tape recorders for EVP experiments have a fine speed control and a review key which quickly rewinds the tape to the last starting point without having to push stop rewind stop play. It is best to use a separate microphone, even if the cassette recorder has a built-in mic, and it is best to have this external mic plugged into a mixer to control its volume while recording. After feeding the microphone into the mixer and the mixer into the recorder, position the microphone about 5 feet from the recorder. Turn the volume down low while you ask questions. Turn the volume up while you wait quietly for answers. Here is an example of what your part of the dialogue might be. Today is April 15, 1995. It is 9:30 p.m. Pause. I would like to establish contact with those on the other side. Pause. Good evening, dear friends. This is, names/names. We greet you. Pause. I would like to thank you for yesterday's answers. Pause. Today I would like to speak with, names/names. Pause. Dear, first names/names, I hope you are present this evening and can hear me. Pause. My first question. EVP experiments can be conducted in a quiet area or with a background noise source. They can be conducted alone or with a group. There are several considerations for each option. By experimenting in a quiet space, the EVP voices stand out clearly on tape, but often the spiritual being lacks the energy to make his messages loud enough to be noticed or long enough to be meaningful. A noise source acts as fuel for the spiritual being's voice capability. He can modulate the sound energy in order to plant louder, longer messages on tape. When you play back the tape, however, it is sometimes difficult to distinguish the voice from the background noise. As a noise source, canned white noise or a taped radio program provides a rich range of frequencies from which the spirit being can work. Taped songs or noise of any sort can also work. By experimenting alone, you eliminate the problem of other people's bad vibes harming the contact, but, unless you are a powerful telepath, you face the problem of working with a weak energy field, or contact field. Experimenting in groups often requires considerable effort to nurture unity and harmony in the group in order to develop the needed contact field, but once you succeed, that field is a strong one. Contact field. Developing a strong, healthy contact field with spiritual beings near to your deceased loved ones, deceased people whom you have always deeply admired is the most important aspect of ITC. Strong here implies developing your psychic skills, healthy implies developing your spiritual nature. When there develops an awareness between two beings, be they human or spiritual, a field of life energy is generated. This life energy goes by such names as subtle energy, Ki, Chi, Shakti, or Gong energy, Kundalini and Holy Spirit. While developing an awareness for a spiritual being comes more naturally to people with psychic or clairvoyant skills, anyone can do it. Whenever we concentrate on a friend out of the past, we develop a contact field with that person. When we concentrate on a deceased loved one, we develop a contact field with the spirit of that person. As we practice this art of concentration, the contact fields we create become stronger and the influence we exert on the other beings becomes greater. Some people call this developing our psychic or telepathic skills. In the dense physical world, the contact field of the average person is scarcely noticeable to anyone but the most sensitive telepaths. In the subtle worlds of spirit, the contact field is more noticeable. Passion builds a strong field. A husband grieving for a deceased wife can actually pull her spirit to his side with his intense yearning. Lusting after a neighbor's spouse creates an unhealthy contact field, because we are destabilizing our family, their family, and to some degree the entire neighborhood. Sending heartfelt love toward a neighbor's family creates a healthy contact field as it adds strength and stability to the social group surround us all.